Good afternoon and welcome to Who's in the Kitchen. You're listening to WDRT 91.9 FM, streaming live on the internet at WDRT.org, where you can listen to this show and previous shows by going to our archives, Who's in the Kitchen. I'm Philothea Beeson, and today we're going to be talking about the food program at Pleasant Ridge School, which has been going for a number of years. We'll find out all about it. My guests in the studio are, well, really kind of special. Mary Christensen, welcome, Mary.
Thank you.
Mary is an old friend of mine, been a part of Pleasant Ridge for a long time and was development officer there for many years, and her daughter went to Pleasant Ridge. And Julie Torino, who is now doing the food program, the lunch program at Pleasant Ridge School. And so we'll be talking about what's happening now. And we have the joy of having Jim Hallberg here, who was not the founder, but also one of the people who conducted the program and developed it for about, 8 or 10 years. So we'll hear more about it, and I'm going to let Mary do part of the interview. We'll be sort of co-hosting.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah.
So you begin, Mary. What okay. did you want to start
Well, I wanted, with? You're doing this food program, right? And I've been listening for years and years, and you do a lot of things that, you know, the recipes and things, but really also people and let's say people involved in the cultivation of our food culture around here, and then you started this agricultural one Saturday a month,
mm-hmm.
doing that,
digging deep,
right? And so I think, given that food is such a big deal here, and the people may not know how much the school has invested in understanding how fresh, local, seasonal food plays a role also in children's lives, and how children can, you know, thrive by having fresh food every day, eating together as a class, having a little community around that food. And that also, by doing that, we introduce them to a wider palate of food than a lot of our assumptions are, that children don't like a lot of variety or they don't like very many things. But we can introduce them to a lot of things, and then they can learn to love it and like it, and then participate even in learning how to cook and grow food and all of those. So our hot lunch program works a little bit like a hub for all of those processes. And so I wanted to talk about it. We've worked a lot with local farmers and producers, and just the very idea that we could have a school having a fresh food lunch program is a kind of unusual idea these times. I mean, we know that a lot of schools don't, and they've even gotten rid of their equipment and things like that, so it can't almost be brought back.
Yes, I know. I've talked with people in the food service program and the public schools, and there are just a lot of challenges.
Mm-hmm.
It's just not that easy. You know, families can't just bring in some food from the garden and say, you know, fix it. I mean, you just have lots of regulations, and there's even insurance involved in people providing food for schools. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it just gets pretty difficult, and then you just go, I guess we'll just go with a program, and they'll say, I don't know if people know how food is done in most schools, but a lot of it is really pre-prepared, and the employees, they're just heated up.
Yeah.
And so this is, when you think about just having a lot of children together, and this is probably, how many are we talking about that you serve every day, Julie?
Average about 100.
So 100. Okay. So 100 is more than just the teacher whipping up some things, you know, or kids bringing a few potluck items or something like that. 100 is pretty challenging. I think it will be really interesting to see all the challenges that you have. You have not just cooking, but purchasing and acquiring. And also preparing from scratch and then finding people to help you? And are those volunteers, or do you pay those people, and do you train those people, and they're always the same people, or are they different? I mean, it's a lot. Then you have dishes, and you have cleanup, dishwashing, and so just a lot of things to be thinking about. And so, Julie, I'm kind of interested in how you got into this job, and did you understand what it was going to involve?
Well, my family and I moved here in 2006 for my daughter to start third grade at Pleasant Ridge. And at the time, they were asking for volunteers to help in the kitchen. And so I started doing that with Jim for a couple of years. And then when he was getting ready to retire, I started working with him half-time, and he taught me all the recipes and all this. And then 13 years ago, when he retired from there, then I took it on full-time.
13 years?
Yeah.
That's amazing. And Jim, how long were you on the...
I started in 2003. I had been a volunteer, and I really liked it, so I was there almost every day until I think I kind of got under
Adrian's
skin slightly, but she humored me, and when she decided she was going to do something new, she asked if I would be interested to take it over, and I was just completely ready to do that.
Great.
And that was in 2003.
And so I think Adrian may have come to us as a school and said, I want to start a hot lunch program.
Now there's the founder.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Adrian?
She goes by Adrian Linden now. Adrian Fox is another.
Okay.
So she
had an idea.
She had this idea, and we didn't want to do it. We thought, oh, how we are having trouble even getting tuition, having people even supporting the school financially enough through a tuition program. How could we do that? And so we worked together. She had ideas of what she could do, and we put some guardrails up around it, like it can't really add on to our overall general costs. Except, well, utilities, yes. And, you know, certain things would be, because the kitchen was there. I mean, this is a building that was built in 1952. And when we took it in 1996, the kitchen had been feeding all the elementary school children at Viroqua area schools. So from grades 1 through 5, I think, were in those two buildings. And the children in the Landmark Center would come over. Then lunch was served in the gym. So the equipment was there.
Well, that was a big...
Huge.
Yes, that was, yeah.
Yeah, that was very important. And we were using it. We were using it as adults to run our festivals, things like that. And teachers would bring their children in for a class to learn how to bake bread or whatever they wanted to do that. There was a lot of that going on, but otherwise people, all the children brought their lunches from home.
And ate in their classrooms?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right. And
That's what I did when I was at Pleasant Ridge,
yeah.
And I taught, and the children brought their own lunches, and then we developed a potluck program.
Oh.
But basically it was just, they brought their lunch, cut it up into pieces, and we laid it out on a table. It grew out of a story.
Yeah.
And then we thought, oh, well, I'll change, you know. Because people would have lunches that kind of smelled weird, and we'd say, what are you eating?
Right.
And so that was an interesting time. But, yeah, you had, the wonderful thing is that you had a commercial kitchen.
Yes.
The sink, the dishwasher, the really good stove.
Oven,
and
stove.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You could make soups, and you could do things on a larger scale. And you could accommodate a few people in the kitchen.
Yes.
So, and I had also run a daycare center for years, and I had to do the food program there.
Mm-hmm.
And I had several little old ladies who were just like me now, still had energy, wanted to be around kids, and would come in and do they would just cook the meal, but I would do the buying. Mm-hmm. I would do all, you know, I'd fill up the fridge and I'd do the menu, and they would just come in and cook. So I really, you know, understand the challenge of, you know, doing 100
meals. Yeah.
Yeah, every day.
Right.
It is every day. Is it every day, no, or 4 days a week?
4 days a week.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, we leave Friday open for, because that's usually our festival day if we're having festivals, and the day where we would be wanting it for community uses. So, or the teachers still wanting to have it sometimes, mm-hmm, for teaching, for letting, right, the children have that experience of, right, making something. But so Adrienne just had this passion for food. I don't know if she was making sauerkraut by then or not, because she started a company.
Physiology.
Yes, was it physiology?
No.
That was Mike Beezer.
Something power.
It was, yeah.
People power? Crowd power?
Crowd power.
Crowd, yeah, power, that's, mm-hmm, right. Oh, mm-hmm, what's it called now? Crowd power is called another kind of cool name. Anyway.
Yeah.
Fermented.
Well, yeah, so anyway, we decided that we would trial it, that she could start this, we would trial it, and people would have to order their meals ahead. So there were a lot of years where we tried different, or let's just say it evolved. It grew, like so many programs, like little by little.
Right.
And she had parent volunteers also, like Jim, coming in. I remember years where we had a volunteer coordinator who would call parents and make the schedule so we'd have the volunteers. So there needed to be at least one adult helper.
So much organizing.
Yeah, there was. Mm-hmm. And then we, you know, we had ideas like children being able to grow a crop like the garlic or be part of it somehow. So there were a lot of different things that went on during those years. And we partnered a little bit with Organic Valley and the food co-op so that we could get discounts or even contributions maybe from, mm-hmm, Organic Valley. But
so the idea was to have organic food,
is
locally grown food,
mm-hmm,
and locally prepared food.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I think it's amazing. When did Adrienne start it, do you think? Even approximately.
I think it would be about 2000.
Say that's about right. I think she was doing it for the first 2 years of her stages. And then, as I said, I'd volunteered. And then when I took it over, that was in 2003. And it really drew on a lot of my past experience cooking. I had worked in an anarchist collective that ran a vegetarian restaurant in Minneapolis that was around for over 40 years. So my background was cooking large amounts of from-scratch food that was vegetarian and as much as possible organic food. And the quality was high. It was a very popular place for people to be served, and I used a lot of the recipes that I learned there at Pleasant Ridge. And some people would probably call it hippie food, but a lot of the parents in Pleasant Ridge are hippies, and so there are a lot of hippie kids. But the main thing was is that being vegetarian, everybody could have the same meal. And a lot of kids still bring their own lunches from home, and that's fine. So if you wanted to have a bologna sandwich, that was great. Just bring it from home.
Oh, okay. That's how you accommodated those who wanted the meat.
Yeah, one meal, it made it a lot simpler. And you, as the main cook, you do have to train yourself for the full time that you're going to be there and to be prepared to do that. So starting 7:30 or 8, a little bit before school starts, was helpful. And being that it was in somewhat of the center of the school, I always considered it to be the hearth of the school, and you could smell, out on the playground, you could smell food coming out of the ventilators, and peaking hunger, hopefully, and we just had the system that Adrian set up, and the acknowledgement of each child was so profound that I really was grateful for her to have got that started and worked out some of the kinks before I did. But we maintained having parent volunteers and having that 4-day-a-week schedule, because it allowed kids to look forward to Monday morning.
Right, and we served, so we did not serve in the gymnasium as a big hall, because during winter and inclement weather and stuff, we'd need that for other things, for recess and things. But also the ethic about having a small group, kind of like a family in each class, and being able to have ritual.
Conversation.
Yeah, and mm-hmm. ritual around it, you mm-hmm. know, bless the food, eat together, have conversation, finish together, take your dishes back to the... In the hallway, we had service tables, you know, where you got your food served to you and then brought the dishes back there.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a sense of responsibility, too, about form and about treating food respectfully and the whole thing, you know, thanking the cooks and understanding the mm-hmm. work that they did. Mm-hmm. And for a while, we thought we could use the older children as service, and they did. They did serve meals. They took turns, too. But it kind of broke up. I don't know. It's not used. We don't do that now, right?
Actually, we do.
Okay.
We have 7th and 8th grade students that come mm-hmm. in
okay.
just to serve, just at the serving time.
Mm-hmm.
And it works out well. They serve their friends. They giggle.
Yeah. Good.
So when you took over, Julie, it wasn't like you were brand new. You had a lot of training.
Yes.
And smoothly moved in.
Yes.
Because I think that, I mean, if you wanted to hire somebody now, you'd want to have some time to get them. I mean, there's so much to know.
There is a lot. And making it fresh, you have to be very flexible on what you can actually find to use and things like that. So it would be a lot to just step in. I was really grateful. Like I said, I worked with Jim for half a year. Every other day I was doing it, and he was doing it the other days, and just trained me along that way. So it's a lot of pieces.
Yes. So I would like you to tell us just kind of what it is to, what the responsibilities are, what, like he was saying, coming in, what time do you come in, what do you have to get done even before the children get there, and would you just describe your job as a description?
Sure. I, too, start usually around 8 o'clock, depending on the meal. Some days are less preparation, so I can come in a little bit later, but generally I'm there by 8 o'clock. I do all the ordering for the food. I make it from scratch. I don't have a prep person currently. We used to have someone that would come in around 10:30 and help get it finished, but for now, for 2 years, I've been doing the whole program. I come in and prepare all the food and serve it, and I even do the dishes and the cleanup. So, but we do have parent volunteers that come in to serve. They show up at 11:30 and they serve lunch through 12:30. But I do a lot of my, I get a lot of my produce from the co-op, Viroqua Food Co-op. I also order through Co-op Partners Warehouse, which carries a lot of organic products. We used to get cheese from Organic Valley. Currently, I get it from Pasture Pride in Cashton. They have an organic line of cheese that I use. But I prepare them. I plan the menus.
Yes. Now, the menus. Do you have pretty much a stock number of menus of ones that you know the kids like? And I think you have, don't you have sort of a mm-hmm. pizza day or Italian day? And I don't know.
Yes. I have about a 6-week rotation.
Okay.
And I can mix and match, but Mondays is always pizza or pasta, different kinds of pasta. Tuesday is something Mexican inspired. Wednesday is always soup and roll. It's either soup and roll, veggie stew and cornbread, or the biggest seller is the chili and cinnamon roll day. Mm-hmm. And then Thursdays is usually something with either rice or potatoes. That is more of a flexible day.
And you do your own baking?
I do.
Oh my gosh.
My flour recipe, which actually is Jim's flour recipe or bread recipe, uses between 20 and 23 pounds of flour per batch.
I remember those days somewhat fondly, but Gosh, Julie, I'm glad you're doing it now.
Well, when do you start that? Day before?
No, I started at 8 o'clock, and it's risen and ready to work by 9:30. And then I'll whip out 10 large sheet pans of pizza on pizza days or on bread rolls. I make about 150 rolls, shape them all by hand. It's a lot of work, but I really love my job because of the kids.
That is really important, isn't it? I'm sure it makes the families happy.
I get many, many love hugs. And there's one class in particular, they started doing it in third grade in their third or first grade in their third grade now, but every single day after lunch, two of the kids come in and thank me for lunch. And they're very excited. They actually really like the food. So it's definitely a job for my heart.
And Julie, I'm sure you might be getting this now because of the length of time you've been there. But kids in the community, kids that were people that we used to cook for, are now adults, and you'll maybe run into them in town at the co-op or something, and they always remember you, and they'll always remember their favorite meal. It's really cool that some of the kids that have graduated through are having their own children now and go to Pleasant Ridge.
Yes, mm-hmm. I've recently had a parent who was, I think, in sixth grade when I came to the school, and her kids are now getting my lunch. So that's pretty exciting.
It really is. You can see how that is the heart of the school.
Mm-hmm.
It's a heart place, and it's a place where love is really exchanged, mm-hmm. and the kids appreciate it and feel it.
They do.
Right, and when you know also how it works into their being able to be attentive in the afternoon to their, because their bellies are full, they have had that nurturing mm-hmm. then the afternoon. I mean, if somebody's going hungry or somebody's had too much of a sugar rush or something in the middle of the day, it doesn't make the next few hours go that well when you have to pull your focus back in to go to school to do your music lesson or your handwork lesson or whatever else is up.
So is there any kind of federal funding of this program?
No.
Or state?
No.
No government?
No.
Because, we talk a lot about the importance of children getting fed and feeling like they can go to school and actually do the work. And I know that in the public schools, in the past, they've had a breakfast program. But some of the breakfast programs have been a lot of sugar and a lot of carbs.
Right.
And it isn't homemade food. And yet, the education and programs in general realize food is really important for the children. But I think most of us our age would be shocked to see what it is like in a public school lunch program. It's even gotten to the point where when I was in Madison, they had food kiosks, and they were done by commercial food restaurants.
Right.
And there would be a pizza stand, and there would be a taco stand, and there would be... And I went, oh my gosh, where are the little old ladies, mashing potatoes? And you know how much we loved the ladies that worked, ladies and gentlemen that worked in the kitchens, and we knew them, kind of like we knew the janitor. We knew them, and they were always greeting us, and it was, very friendly. And I thought, gosh, this is like This is like street food at a school, and it just has such a different feel. Like it didn't have any connection to what was going on in the classroom.
Right. I just think, I don't know, if we really look at how the culture has shifted, that it's the people who are doing these programs, it's kind of like not their fault. We're all pretty much, even we had to wonder, well, would the children really eat anything other than mac and cheese, for instance? I mean, some people feel that that's, some parents feel that their children aren't going to eat the lunch if they pay for it because mm-hmm. they don't eat those things at home. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we run into that. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't take them very long for the children to actually accept these new flavors. Part mm-hmm. of it's because if they start in kindergarten at our school, they start having those sit-down meals together where they've watched the assistant cook the meal. They might have even gone over and helped chop vegetables. Mm-hmm. They're part of it. They're wrapped up into it. And they're served things like sauerkraut and the different grains. They understand what rice is versus barley versus, I don't know, what rye, and because they'll make porridges that are different tastes. Mm-hmm. So by the time they get to first grade, they're kind of open to mm-hmm. some of that. And then you produce a lunch menu that's monthly. So mm-hmm. people can see this lunch menu mm-hmm. and choose which, and then sometimes they choose it with their kids. They'll say, okay, do you want to do this day? And they'll go through the whole month's list and check off what they want and figure out what their lunch fees are going to be. And that gets turned into the office. Or now, of course, we have this online way of doing things. There, a lot of things have gone that way. And then they can get credits if they've missed because of illness or something like that. It's kind of complicated.
Really?
Mm-hmm. But,
really?
But they can do it. So I know, like, every once in a while, Jim would put in something kind of new. Like, remember when you did the tofu meal? That seemed like, oh, will the kids really eat that? We'll see how many gets order, how many order it. But it became a very popular meal, right?
Yeah, it really did. And a good way to get vegetables into the kids.
Hey, Jim, share us that tofu meal. What kind of tofu meal would kids like?
Well, I think, surprisingly, the tofu is pressed, and then it's put into kind of a sauce bath of soy, but a lot of chopped up garlic. And it adheres to the tofu, and then it gets baked, so it's kind of crispy and salty. Mm-hmm. And then we would normally serve that with a sauce, like a peanut sauce or a tahini garlic sauce. This all goes on brown rice. That tofu just hooked them. The way that it was cooked, it's not mm-hmm. super soft.
Mm-hmm. And they're little crisp. Chunks, yeah, little cubes. Chunks. 1-inch cube, so...
Oh, they're cubed. Mm-hmm. I was thinking of kind of a slab, but they're cubed.
Cubed up.
But a little tougher, a little...
Well, not tough, but crisp.
Crisp.
If you seal it with high enough heat, you have soft on the inside and crisp on the outside, mm-hmm. ideally.
Yeah, but being able to look ahead for the parents and the kids and see what's coming, mm-hmm. then they're committed, too, you know, like...
Right. Well, okay, I do need to take a station break. You're listening to Who's in the Kitchen on WDRT Community Radio, 91.9 FM, and streaming live on the internet at WDRT.org. And then you can go and listen to this program or former programs by going to our archives. Just look up Who's in the Kitchen. And we are coming from southwestern Wisconsin, the Driftless area. And we are in a really rich organic area, kind of a food-oriented area. We're not too far from Organic Valley and Lafarge. We have a wonderful food co-op here in Viroqua. We have a lot of parents who do their own gardening. There's many farm gardeners and a farmer's market in the summer. And so we have access to food, and a lot of people who are interested in good food, good cooking. And this, we're talking today about the food program that's been going for about 27 years at Pleasant Ridge School, the Waldorf School here in Viroqua. And we have two people who have run the food program, Jim Hallberg, who did it for many, many years, and now Julie Torino. And then also in our studio today is Mary Christensen, and she has been with the school for many years, mainly as development officer, helping organize fundraising and development in the school, and had her own children there. Julie, you've had your kids there?
Yes, I have.
And Jim has had his children there. So, and I was a teacher there, so we did not have a food program at that time. We were in the old main building, and the first few years we had that upstairs divided by a large velvet theater curtain to keep the sound between two classrooms that were going at the same time. And we had dark stairs that went down to the bathrooms and the dark basement where there was a little kitchen. We did some cooking down there, boiled down maple sap, dipped candles, and various things in that kitchen. But that really would not have been the place to have a food program. Mm-hmm. Definitely wasn't equipped. So I'm very appreciative of the physical space that you inherited when the school moved. Pleasant Ridge bought the old elementary school. And what was the date of that, Jim?
1952.
The building
is 1956,
we moved in.
Okay, 1996, okay, because I don't even remember that. But that was a huge move from a two-room schoolhouse to a...
Yeah, we served eight grades.
Yeah, the former elementary school in Viroqua, and they moved to the new school on the west side of town.
Right.
So there have been many, many changes. And having that kitchen, it is really an asset for other things besides just the school food program.
Right.
I mean, if you can serve food at any event...
Right.
This is just, it's always the heart of something.
And in
to
the
be
summer, sometimes we sponsor, somebody will sponsor a conference, and they'll want food prepared. Well, then they can do that right there in the kitchen.
Right.
Rent facilities and do that. Sometimes people have made a recipe that they want to produce, and they can rent the kitchen for a few hours. So people could contact the school and ask about that availability and cost. But we try to keep it open for, to serve community also, one thing I think we should talk about a little bit too is this awareness that we became aware of the challenges of food service in the public schools through a program that Monique Hooker and what was her name, Mrs. Volden, the food service person at the public school, they started this challenge, and a chef or somebody took on a group of students in the neighboring high schools. The challenge was to prepare a meal that stayed within the budget that they had to work with, which was like $3.50, prepare it and serve it and learn about what it takes. Mm-hmm. Like Luke Zahm he worked with a group, I don't know which group, but anyway, so let's say five local high schools sent teams, and that event was then in the cafeteria at the public school. We came as the people from the public, we bought the lunch, and then we got to see which lunch we wanted. We voted. Right.
Yeah.
It was really energetic, the students getting involved, the parents, the school. But we really understood what the challenges were then, to prepare a from-scratch meal at that cost.
Right.
Right?
That's another thing, the cost of the ingredients.
Yeah, and then Monique... They made ratatouille, and froze it to use later in the winter for pizzas and pastas and things. Anyway, there was a lot of attempt to try to bring a kind of food security to the area. That was an issue. Like, oh, if all of our food is coming from outside our area, how secure are our food sources for the institutions, mm-hmm. hospitals, schools, etc.? So for a few years, we were trying to work on that. And out of that came also the Fifth Season Cooperative. But the challenges are big, and they're real, and they're not all of our faults. I just wanted to say that, that it does take a lot of consciousness to try to work in the environment of so many things having gotten, what, monopolized, kind of, and industrialized, and, you know, we're...
Mm-hmm. Well, I'd say that does really characterize life here in this Driftless area. That's why a lot of people come here and want to move here, mm-hmm. because there is a food consciousness and a consciousness of sustainability, local reliance, and not being so dependent on outside sources. What word am I thinking of? Anyway,
self-sufficient and self-reliant.
Yes, self-sufficient. And I think we're coming to that. I mean, time-wise, we could just say what's happening on the news right now is really quite horrifying. And prices are coming up on gasoline, which affects transportation of food. And, of course, we've been thinking for a long time, why are we getting food from California and Mexico and mm-hmm. Guatemala and, you know, places that maybe we need to eat more seasonally and only eat what is available in our area. And we do have the Food Enterprise Center and VEDA, Vernon Economic Development Association, which saw this problem a long time ago and said, look, we grow our own food. Mm-hmm. Why can't we make it available? So we do have a center here in Viroqua called the Food Enterprise Center, and Sue Noble had looked at the situation here and thought, what do we have here? What do we have in the Driftless area that we can rely on? It can be a way to employ people and use what we have. And focused on food. I mean, this is a wonderful food growing area, and there are a lot of, you know, young farmers that come here and rent or buy land and grow food, and we have a, you know, thriving farmers market. But the problem is, when's that food available? In the summer. But school is in the winter. So, well, I think that's what Monique then came up with, was let's train people to use this food that is grown in the summer and there's a great surplus, and let's make pans and pans of roasted tomatoes and things like that and can them or freeze them, and then we have them available to make dishes during the winter for our food program. And that was part of what you were describing, Mary, mm-hmm. The students working with chefs and developing menus of foods that would be available, they would be local, they would be affordable, they would be delicious, and we actually have a competition to see whose recipes were voted the best and things like that. Under Monique, we saw the challenge from that position, what the public schools were up against, and also how to get the food from here to there. You mentioned the Fifth Season Co-op,
right?
And there were a couple of efforts, which I think
that was
to
bring the producers to gather producers' products together in one place and then sell.
Right.
Have a person who would market them. But the other important part of that was having storage, having winter storage. This is what a lot of small farmers can't do. But if they bring them into the pool, the produce pool, and there is refrigeration, and that's where Sue would, and that building has enormous capacity for cooling vegetables and keeping them in cold storage for a long time. And the school, too, eventually we wrote a grant for a refrigerator freezer outside the building so that we also could buy more in bulk and store.
Mm-hmm.
So those are the limitations on any food, whether it's a restaurant, a school, a community. There has to be a way to bring that produce in for the winter, for that. And is that why Monique called it Fifth Season? She wrote a cookbook.
Cooking Through the Seasons, I think.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But anyway, so all of those things, they appear to us as we try to do something. This is a barrier. Oh, this is a little challenge. How are we going to get over this one? Where are we going to store the garlic if we grow our whole bunch? Where are we going to store the onions? Where are we going to dry them?
It wasn't the school.
No, but...
Yeah.
Well, we ended up putting a little greenhouse against the school, so some things could be dried there or whatever. But anyway, it took the challenges to... You have to meet challenges along the way to know how all these things work, because our society has lost it. Mm-hmm. I mean, I remember being in school as an elementary child and going to the kitchen in the summers when the women came and did the canning of all the tomatoes for our lunch program. And
really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. It was a little parochial school. So anyway, we all came from those roots because we had to, and now we're not in that same situation, so we have to reinvent contemporary ways to do accomplish our needs, I think. So through the years, we've also, at the school, we don't have the steam soup pot anymore, and we don't have the whatever that other machine was to keep hot buns moist. I don't know. And we've gotten a new convention oven. We've already gotten one new stove and have used it up, sort of. And so we're in this process. I'm just going to give a little pitch right now of getting new equipment for the stove and the hood, because the hood is the original 1952 version. We've really taken this and used this building as much as we can, and are in the process of having to, update systems. And the kitchen is the first one we're focusing on. I mean, we've done the boiler before, and we've done other things, but right now it's the kitchen. We need the new stove and hood. And so we've been running a campaign for the last several months, and we've gotten several grants for it. But we are buying a new stove and a new hood exhaust system to make everything...
Well, it has to be safe, too.
Safe, exactly.
The hoods are really important.
So I wanted to just say that we've gotten grants from two Waldorf school type organizations we can apply to, and they support us. And Citizens First gave us a donation, and individual donors have been donating through the years. I think we need about $6,000 more in donations by July 30th, so that we can start installing. We have volunteers ready to do installation. Rockweiler is giving us a discount on the stove a little bit. And so anyway, if people are curious or interested about that program, you could go to our website, pleasantridgewaldorf.org, to our fundraising donations page and find the kitchen campaign. And you can donate over online or send a check.
Well, that's very interesting. I'm sure there are people in the community that have no idea that you have this need.
Right.
And like me, and yet have a connection to the school or love to see the school program. And here's a place that could use some help. I think it is... it's probably kind of humbling to come in, Julie, and be the recipient of something that got started. So many things are already started, and you got to come in where a lot of the problems had already been ironed out.
Yes.
And the proper equipment was there to do that kind of thing, and now you've gone through probably some of the replacement of that equipment.
Yeah, when we built the walk-in cooler and freezer, that was when I had first gone full-time.
Oh, really?
That was my first big project, and it really changed how I could order and store food. It's a wonderful asset for us.
Yes. Where is that? Is that in the kitchen or nearby or what?
It's right outside the kitchen between the building and the greenhouse.
Oh, okay.
Back in that corner.
Oh,
the building is shaped like an L.
Yes.
So right in that center of where the two legs of the school meet, that's where the kitchen is and the gym.
Yes.
And so it's right tucked in there, and that, right outside the kitchen door. There's a cement pad.
When you think about fixing 100 meals a day, that's a lot of food. That just, and a refrigerator just can't manage that.
No.
And like you say, when you can buy a little bit more in bulk and store, that's really helpful. And do you use the greenhouse?
The greenhouse hasn't been used in several years, really.
Is it more for the teachers to try to use as a resource if they want to do a project in a greenhouse?
Yeah, you know, part of it is that energy. Who's going to do whatever that is? It's often the place for the seventh grade plant sale. They might come in there and do starts and things like that and set it up, clean it all out and set it up for that. There's the idea of having a permanent, like, herb bed, culinary herbs. Some years that's worked, some years not. It really, again, I mean,
it depends on the energy and imagination, but it's there. I think it's pretty exciting that it's there. I mean, how many schools have their own greenhouse? It's not large.
It's not large.
But just think, I didn't even know if it's still there, but there was a handmade pizza oven.
Oh, it's still there.
And that was, you know, it was a class that came up with the idea of building the oven and then making it available for people to use. So I think, you know, you have so many teachers and you have parents and you just have people with ideas and they get inspired and just like the founder of the food program, whose name I might not recall.
Adrian.
Mm-hmm. You know, just Adrian just had that idea. And it's really wonderful. This is what schools like Pleasant Ridge and Youth Initiative really thrive on, is the initiative of the students and the parents. They really have a role. I remember Waldorf teachers coming from other schools and asking us, how do you get so much parent involvement?
Right.
We are so lucky. I mean, I say we. I'm not involved in the school, but it's partly my school. You know, really caring and wanting to be part of it. And I think maybe if you're in a big city, maybe the school is just only a part of your life. But out here, a school like this, even the public school as well, or the Montessori school, I mean, this is something parents really want to put energy into, and that's part of what makes the schools wonderful is the parent involvement, initiative, ideas, and not just going to meetings, but actually coming up with you know, real projects that are meaningful to all the families. And Pleasant Ridge is one of those schools. I think we feel we are in a very dynamic community. You get inspired by other people.
Yeah, the initiative part is really important. But I think part of that is our human scale, right? If you have a human scale organization, you're much more likely to get this because we can actually see what our needs are. And then we can think about what solutions are and we can have the freedom to bring them out. And all of our, I mean, how many organizations here in town are really volunteer driven? Most, like so many. The fairgrounds, even the chamber relies so much in the committees on this volunteerism. So there's an ethic of service and wanting to be involved. And I think that when you're like that, then you come to a place like there wasn't very much when we moved here 33 years ago, but what there was, ooh, there's a lot to do here. I could see it, like, ooh, we could fit in, we could get involved.
I think about the other small towns around here, where Pleasant Ridge, I mean, Viroqua is kind of bursting at the seams. It's hard to even find a place to rent, to live here in town. But there are some other small towns that used to be quite vibrant and aren't right now. And I just would love to see that kind of energy becoming, growing up in those small towns, wondering what is the key to that kind of development and supporting of initiatives.
But don't you think, like, take Lafarge. It was anchored by Organic Valley. They could have moved anywhere, and they didn't, on purpose. They felt a loyalty to Lafarge because mm-hmm. that's where they started. Mm-hmm. And so there are, and then Go Macro moved to Viola.
But you don't see that much now. Maybe it takes years.
I think it takes years, and but they're building these housing elements.
You need housing. You need a grocery store, and many of these little towns do not even have a grocery store anymore. That used to be the hub, mm-hmm. and a lot of them don't have a restaurant. Just even a place to go for lunch. There's some food carts sometimes that have set up. Then at Organic Valley and Go Macro, they set up their own food service programs for their employees, which is really can be really great, but also it doesn't really help the town. So people don't rush out at lunch hour and go to the local, you know, mm-hmm. burger joint or sandwich place or anything. I mean, Viola has hardly changed since Go Macro got there. I might be exaggerating, but you do see these towns like Liberty Pole. It used to be a vibrant little town, and now it's just a town that you pass through. But it had a school. It had an elementary school that was the heart of that little town. There's a feed mill. There was a general store. You can see those things, but they're kind of becoming antiques. And if someone moved out here and really wanted to have some enterprises, there's lots of opportunities to settle in a small town and get something going, and I'm sure people would really, really appreciate it. Now, we had the food co-op movement. When I moved out here, there was a food co-op in many of the small towns. And from Richland Center, Gaze Mills, there were food buying co-ops, and then we had a food co-op in Viola, and then we had the food co-op in Viroqua, which really was the one that got the big facility going and got even bigger. And so, I mean, it's a wonderful asset for all of us to have just a co-op like you would find in Madison in a little town of 4,000 people. But it seems like there's opportunity to do things in these other small towns. Westby is a wonderful little place mm-hmm. too.
And that's starting to happen there too.
There are some really sweet little ventures there mm-hmm. in Westby. Mm-hmm. And they have a grocery store, but it's the far end of town. I always think that food... It's nice to have food in kind of in the center where people can walk, right. ride their bikes.
Right.
So I'm just going off a little bit, but I think Viroqua could be just an inspiration to other people. Do the same thing in their town. Don't be afraid to start something that brings... There's always people who want to volunteer and help out with something. Like we do have... food pantries in many of these small mm-hmm. towns, and a lot of volunteers help with that. And I was really surprised how many towns have food pantries.
Well, that's a growing movement. Why? Because of this insecurity around mm-hmm. food. So there has to be a synergy, too, of certain social organizations. If you only have one, it's not as powerful. If you have two or three... things can start happening, and there's a magnetism, I think, that pulls more people in.
Oh, there is. There's a magnetism. And you see the examples, and you go, wow, I could be inspired to do that. Mm-hmm. So we've been talking about the food program here at Pleasant Ridge Waldorf School in Viroqua, which could be a model for other schools to start. And I'm sure that Julie and Mary and people at Pleasant Ridge School would be happy to be a resource for other schools that wanted to initiate things like this. And also our wonderful food instructor at Youth Initiative High School wrote an entire four-year course on food production and
the whole plate.
Growing the whole plate. Mm-hmm. Jane Seaman. Jane Seaman. And that is a resource too. And Jane's still alive and kicking like me and would be happy to consult with people who want to do some kind of a food program or food education program in their school. So Pleasant Ridge can be a resource for. Mm-hmm. And you could contact Pleasant Ridge through WDRT and our show, Who's in the Kitchen. And I want to thank you, Julie Torino, and Mary Christensen, and Jim, our old friend and engineer of this show, and also one of the cooks and founders of the Pleasant Ridge Food Program that we've been discussing today. So thanks to all of you for coming in and sharing your memories and experiences. And
thank you for having us and letting us tell our story.
Thank you.
Good. Thanks, yeah. Julie. Okay. Thank you, my listeners, for tuning in. We're on at noon on Saturdays, and it's Who's in the Kitchen. Thanks again. Bye.